Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
Hey, listener, Zach Harper here. Underdog Fantasy, the easiest place to play fantasy sports. Also, fastest growing fantasy app in the industry. Here's how it works. The Pick'em game. Pick whether your favorite players will have a higher or lower stat total in this week's game for a chance to win big. How big, you ask? I'm so glad you asked that question, listener. You can win up to 100 times your money in a single night. Pick between 2 and 5 players, build a pick'em entry. You can also do rivals picks. You can put like Tyrese Haliburton and Jalen Brunson against each other, and whoever has more points, more assists, more rebounds, whatever you want to do, that is your rivals pick. I would maybe go with Jalen Brunson in these playoffs. By the way, in the regular season, Jalen Brunson, scoring tear, going higher on his point totals all the time. Joel Embiid, whenever he did actually play, higher on his scoring totals all the time. Victor Wembanyama, for the next 15, 20 years, here's a pro tip for you, take higher on the blocks. That's right. So you're probably wondering, how do you sign up? Oh my God, listener, you are full of good questions today. Sign up with the promo code DING, that's D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. $250, man, that's a lot. Visit underdogfantasy.com or find them in the App Store. And don't forget to register with our code DING, D-I-N-G, to claim your special pick and first-time deposit offer, up to $250 in bonus cash. Must be 18 or older, 21 or older in Massachusetts, Arizona, 19 or older in Alabama and Nebraska, and present in a state where Underdog Fantasy operates. Terms apply. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.ncpgambling.org. Arizona 1-800-NEXT-STEP, that's 1-800-639-8783, or text NEXT STEP to 53342. New York, call the 24/7 HOPE line at 1-877-8-HOPE-NY, or text HOPE-NY 467-369.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it, all while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free Bright Side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to your latest edition of the Woke Bros. I'm your gracious co-host, Big Waz. Of course, as always, I got my main man, Michael Jamal Abdul Shabazz Muhammad Brooks in the house.
Trying to stay as gracious as you, my friend. How you doing?
I love it. I'm good, man. It's happy to be back, man. We took a week off to stretch our legs. You know what I'm saying? Kind of, you know how when you work out at the gym, you don't want to go every single day because your body becomes fatigued and then you start to have a reverse effect and break your shit down. You got to have some rest days in between. I think we went a bunch of weeks in a row of just exciting, dynamic, incredible, intelligent content. And so we decided to ease up last week, but now we're back and stronger and better than ever.
Yeah, exactly. For the past, I don't know, like 8 months now I do know what you're talking about again.
Like, that's good.
A lazy fuck. Well, actually, I don't know, man. Late 20s, early 30s was just like,
it's a revelation.
I just need to work, right? Yeah. It was almost like, through my 20s, I was still doing like, hey, I can be balanced. You know what I mean? Like, and then it was all of a sudden like, oh shit, I cannot be balanced. I need to do this. And then it was like, got some headwinds. And then all of a sudden you're like, all right, shit. What happened to my cardio? What happened to my, like, I'm running to get a Subway.
Oh, it catches up on you so much faster.
Yeah, that's not good. It's
the speed with which your washness creeps up on, it's yes. Incredible.
Yes.
Of course, we can't forget about the junior producer. You ain't quite super yet, Rob Lopez. We're gonna let you wait on the super title, but Rob Lopez, of course, is on the ones and twos
super
as always.
Training.
But he's doing his Thug Dizzle as always. Just to pay some bills really quick, man. The TMBS live show is upon us, February the 1st. At the Bell House in Brooklyn, USA, man. This is a long time coming, a long time in the making. I'm really excited for the whole team, man. That's
yeah, gonna be man. Crazy. I'm really excited about this. I'll say honestly, like, if you're if you're listening tomorrow morning when this comes out, I don't even like. Right now, as of recording, there's some tickets left. Maybe there won't. I mean, check definitely tomorrow if you're listening to this. But we're going to have a great time. Now, the sketches are recorded. The plans are laid out. We've got the great Alona Minkowski, the great Bhaskar Sunkara, the great Trevor Beaulieu, the great funny man Mike Racine. Of course, you've got all of us. It's going to be a really good show. It's going to be special. So, hopefully, see you out there. And definitely if you're specifically a Woke Bros Count the Dings person, let me know. Cause I think, in general, it's fascinating how somebody finds, what you do, but I really want to know people that are listening to this specifically.
The cross pollination, swords crossing, if you will, of TMPS
right.
And the Counted Dings
sure.
And the Counted Dings Network. And of course, man, March 2nd is also. Obviously, February 1st is no longer creeping upon us. It's this fucking Friday, March 2nd. Counted Dings live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, in and around the Sloan Analytics Conference out there, man. We're going to have the live show at the Middle East. Tickets are moving faster and faster as we get closer to the date. A lot of special guests already signing on, man. Of course, you can expect the entire Count the Dings crew. Jade has taken to calling this show the Waston Show because he thinks I'm going to, come at my nemesises out in Boston, a.k.a. what I like to call the birthplace. The Mecca of the white American bro. It's so
the NECA of the white.
And if you really think about it, it's true.
No, it's not wrong. It's just interesting terminology. I like it. How about it?
Yeah, man, that's coming up March the 2nd. Make sure you get your tickets. VIP tickets have already sold out. General admin is out there, man. And, you know, not to say that if you don't get VIP, you won't get a VIP experience. I'm just telling you, you know, the stuff, the free t-shirts, the blah, 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 blah. But trust me, there'll be plenty of opportunities to meet people, connect with people, man, finally come out and say what's up to the entire crew. It's going to be a good time. So now that we paid some bills, Mike, let's get on to the show.
Let's do this.
Today we're gonna get into the great. What's the guy's first? I've been calling him Schultz.
Howard Schultz.
Howard. I was about to call him George Schultz. Is that somebody or did you just make that up? Howard.
Yeah,
Schultz.
George. I don't know who, but George Schultz was somebody. He was okay. I feel like he was like a defense secretary or something.
There you go. Howard Schultz. Of Starbucks fame. He's been running his yap recently.
That's exactly right.
All in the media because he's, you know, formed an exploratory committee. He's meditating on whether or not he should run for president. We're going to get into that at the top of the show. Of course, Kamala Harris, who's kind of proven, like, with her presidential announcement that she's going to be a force in this race, what, no matter what side of the Democratic, the lefty, the progressive, the liberal arm of things in politics you fall on, she's going to be around throughout the course of this race, as we're starting to see with this announcement. We're going to get into the town hall that she had this week. And then, of course, we're going to get into Davos and just the abject ridiculousness of that entire enterprise and some party crashes, man, some gate crashes. Did some beautiful work down there, man. And me and Michael took a extreme liking to that. So we're gonna get into that a little bit. But of course, first, man, Howard Schultz, billionaire, former CEO of Starbucks, former Seattle Supersonics owner, who, might I add, sold the team in a huff because he couldn't get public funding for a fucking basketball arena. The layers of the hypocrisy and the ridiculousness of this guy and this week and this media blitz is beyond comprehension, honestly, when you think about our moment, right? Especially in politics today, where it's like even Donald Trump knows he can't talk shit about Medicare. He can't talk shit about social. Like, even he knows that. You know, the guy that is the Republican leader knows he can't do that shit and actually keep a constituency involved. In the year of our Lord, 2019, Howard Schultz can come out and try to tell me he's a social liberal, but a fiscally responsible conservative. What? I'm sorry. I know I sound exasperated, but like, I just, because I haven't gotten a chance to interact with you guys a majority or on TMBS this week, and I know you guys tackled this bullshit. So please, talk to me, man. Talk to me, please.
I mean, I can't talk you off of a ledge. I mean, it's let's move it up in orders of importance, right? So actually, right out of the gate, the response to him has been correct from the general public, which is mockery, derision, and dismissal, including that gentleman who should get an award from the public who, at the Barnes & Noble in Union Square, you know, interrupted his bloviating platitudes to say, like, basically, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but literally, like, listen, you narcissistic asshole, like, don't run this ridiculous vanity campaign and potentially help Trump get reelected. So,
well, let's begin with what I said on national TV last night so I can frame the answer. What I said last night is that I am seriously considering running for president as a centrist independent. And I wanted to clarify the word independent, which I view merely as a designation on the ballot.
And don't what, help elect Trump, you egotistical billionaire asshole. Go back to getting ratioed on Twitter. Go back to Davos with the other billionaire elite who think they know how to run the world. That's not what democracy means.
You know, look, that's great. On the flip side, the media
They have learned nothing from 2016.
Nothing. And I love that you say 2016, because the truth of the matter is like, I'll get to the differences in a second, but I hope people see how clearly, like, I know, like, this is the same shit as Donald Trump. It's all because I'm rich, I know. And this country is so pathological. It's a bigger problem about capitalism and worshiping business. Like, nobody said, I mean, I always use this example, how in the Walter Isaacson's Steve Jobs book, he solicits Steve Jobs' opinion on public education. And it's some, you know, it's typical, banal Silicon Valley bullshit. And I say, you know, you never would ask the New Jersey State Public School Teacher of the Year how to run an iPhone supply chain. And just the idea that you have a guy who is, you know, great. He got made a lot of money slanging coffee beans. He's bad on labor. He's bad on trade practices. He's an oligarch. And he clearly has been surrounded by specifically, you know, hack consultants like Bill Burton, who worked for Barack Obama, and Steve Schmidt, who worked for George W. Bush, who, you know, if we were animating it, the fucking dollar signs are going. I mean, I'm tempted to go to Howard Schultz and be like, hey, dude, I'll help you figure out how to talk to the youth, dude, because this is an opportunity to just make stupid money off of a delusional rich person. But the last thing I'll say, though, really quick, though, is, you know, the real test here, and we'll get to this later, but there was a political article that came out that basically these Wall Street guys were like, Beto, cool. Biden, cool. Harris, cool. Gillibrand, cool. The only ones we don't want are Sanders and Warren, which, of course, that should just
be all you need to know. Like,
that's all you need to know. That's all you need to know about who the top choices are. So I'll say this. If the Democratic Party nominates a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, somebody like Howard Schultz, who at the end of the day, as much as they might hem and haw about this or that, they're oligarchs and they want to guard a system of theft, if we're using the right word, that increases their wealth at the expense of the well-being of everybody else. And they will absolutely risk putting Donald Trump back into office for another term, because at the end of the day,
he's helped by this stuff.
Exactly.
And you know, he gives the whole fucking game away every time he opens his stupid ass mouth. It's the reason why I even started thinking about this is I see all the traction that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is getting in the party. It's not, yo, bro, we elected a fucking lunatic to office. In 2016, this guy didn't come around and say, yo, bro, I think I'm going to look into this politics stuff because I think I can. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez comes around, and that's what animates him. That's what makes him want to get involved, right? And it's no wonder, no kidding. Yes, it's because he's very rich. We're talking about holding rich people accountable. And the problem with, which doesn't, you know, and who's going to point this out to the mainstream media if it's not the mainstream media? The problem with the coverage, right, is, you know, and by the way, Mika and Cup of Joe, whatever the fuck his name is, Morning Joe, they actually like asked this dude, like, just not to say they went hard on him, but they didn't go soft. They were just like, all right, you want to do this, but like, why? And then he looked like an idiot. He sounded like an idiot. But the reason why those people are susceptible to this stuff is just that Mika Brzezinski, bro, is for all intents and purposes rich. The tax argument, the argument that we need to lower taxes on the people in the top brackets, is going to be something to appeal to TV reporters because they make a lot of money, right? Like, back in the days, yes, if you were just some, you know, some schmuck working your local beat, like, yes, you were a working man, right? Like, I'm sorry. If you are somebody who works at MSNBC or CNN, and we don't need to get into Fox, but if you're on the TV over there, you identify more with this Schultz clown than you do some teacher making 60 grand, 55 grand a year. It's just the facts. Like, you don't identify with the janitors. You don't identify with garbage men. You don't identify with workers, bro. You know what I'm saying? And so like, when you see this little media blitz where, like, this lady gets up there and she talks to the Stein dude from Washington Post, and it's like, well, just because he's against the high marginal tax rate doesn't mean that it's because it's going to personally affect him. It's like, in the dude's
No, that was amazing. That was Stephanie Ruhle on MSNBC and Jeff Stein.
By the way, hold on.
Yeah.
Liberal, and I'm using air quotes here, liberal MSNBC who's saying this shit.
Well, I mean, look, no, right. I mean, and actually, and so, yeah, so Jeff Stein from Washington Post was basically saying the mind-blowingly obvious thing that this guy is personally perturbed about a tax proposal that might actually tax some of his obscene wealth as Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's policy advisor. His Twitter bio says every billionaire is a policy failure, and that's 100% right. But like, and then she said, isn't that naive? Which is like one of the funny, like, I don't even know.
Like, no, the question you're asking is the naive one, lady.
For that level of delusion. But like, but you know, but that's the big thing, right? Is, and I've actually been saying this for as long as I've done political commentary. The really, and I want to be careful here too, because it's actually super narrow. It's definitely not that like the elites are passionate about racial justice or demilitarizing the border or any of these other quote unquote social issues. I hate that term, but on the other hand, it's like, look, people, the elites of this country who are, you know, absolutely, obviously just overrepresented in wealth and media. They're that, like, you know, gay people are cool. Women should be able to have an abortion, but frankly, unless they have to actually pay for public health provisions, which is kind of another question. And they're fucking oligarchs. And that's actually the funniest thing about Howard Schultz's candidacy. Because to be honest with you, it's like, if you really were out going to like the quote unquote middle of the country, and I'm, by the way, I don't think, like, I think obviously America is a massively, it's foundationally a racist country, but I also think that the type of racism that Trump is playing is very specific to the Republican Party. But what I'm saying is, like, if you were going to run like I want to run an independent campaign that spoke to the center of the country, you'd actually basically go out to the center of the country and you'd be like, you know what? I think your guns are cool, and I'm going to tax those motherfuckers on Wall Street to give you health care. It's the opposite of what Howard was talking about.
He has no constituency.
Opposite. It has no – well, the constituency has is the ultra-wealthy, over-credentialed of the country who have a disproportionate influence. But it's just funny to me that like I'm aware on the issues where I know that I am definitely to the left – of like quote unquote mainstream opinion. But I would say pretty much none of those are on the issues of economics, where I'm a socialist. And you know what? People are on board with that. Like, they might not be on board with all my, you know, views of what we need to do about policing and prisons, right?
Sure.
But that's – so it's just
economically, wild. Everybody's on board with it.
Everybody, to some version of that, they are on board with wealth taxes. They're on board with Medicare for All because it's good for most people.
People. It's – you, and the thing that people need to realize is that, you know, Howard Schultz is – essentially just Paul Ryan, you know, if Paul Ryan had to take a lie detector test.
If you made
Paul Ryan truthfully talk about shit like abortion or like guns and shit or any of that, or any of the stuff that, you know, the base Republican voter actually cares about – He's basically in line with any mainstream Democrat, any Howard Schultz type. Like, if you gave him truth serum, he does not care. Of course chicks should be able to get abortion, right? Like, of course, yeah. Duh. You know what I'm saying? Like, but of course, and again, whenever I haven't heard a single conservative talk about the deficit since January of 2017. It hasn't come up once. On, Mike. And then this idiot goes, we need to get the deficit is the big... Bro, what, this is... It's just, bro, even the Republicans who claim to care about this shit, they don't even do it anymore because they don't have to.
They'll do it the next time they make a push for Social Security or Medicare, or the next time a Democrat's in office. Like, that's it. And, I mean... Like, literally, look, this could get very serious if somehow somebody with, like, an actual economic agenda gets the Democratic nomination, whether that be with Sanders, Warren, potentially even Sherrod Brown. But besides that, then it could get really serious because they will, you know, spend a huge amount of money and try to really wreck the country in the election because – ultimately, it's obviously just narcissism and selfishness. But, you know, before we get to that point, there is a way in which, like, you could just look at this guy as, like, a microcosm of everything wrong with the country, even just down to the way – like, I was watching Bill Burton, right, who used to be an Obama guy, and he was doing a hit, like, defending working for Schultz and talking about, like, how we need to expand our political imagination. And I'm honestly watching this guy bullshit on TV, and I'm like – I actually started to feel bad for Howard Schultz because I'm like, this is the hustle inside the hustle inside the hustle. Like, this guy's delusional enough to think some people are looking for some fucking, like, barista, you know, kingpin to do this. And there's enough fucking, you know, credentialed consultants like Washington Steve Schmidt and Bill Burton who are like, you know what? I will absolutely, like, maybe you don't want to be taxed to create free college or healthcare for people, but I'll certainly fucking tax your fucking ego and make a
and the Steve Schmidt type. This is why I'm always wary of any Never Trumper. Like, it's doing is waiting for a Schultz type to hop on. Like, they're not actually friends of anybody but themselves, right?
Yes.
Like, it's like, okay, I can defend Schultz's stupidity with dignity. Right? Like, to a certain point, yeah, Steve Schmidt knows, like, damn, there's no dignity in working for Donald Trump. Like, there just is none.
Right.
Like, not even a scintilla of that shit to be had if you take a job with that dude. But Schultz, of course, I can hold my head high doing this grift. 100%
right.
I can do that. You know, and that's right. Why you got to be wary of those type of
a cats. Lot of money.
Money, of course. But that's all these people care about, right? It's like just this idea that, like, you know, a Never Trump, especially a lifelong Republican operative, like the idea that you don't know who Republican voters are is bullshit, bro. It's just crazy to me. Like, the idea that we've civilized these savages just because they've pointed out the obvious of just like, yo, this guy that we elected is a horrible person. It's just like, it's amazing how low the bar is for those dudes. But, you know,
they support the agenda. They support the agenda. I mean, that's just the bottom line. Whether it's, I mean, do you oppose coup in Venezuela? Do you want people to have health care? Do you want to do something about policing? Do you want to do something like, no. I actually want rich people to be given even more money. I want people to be even poorer and sicker. But, you know, I think Trump, you know, it's like Ana Navarro. It's like, do it with a degree of class. That's literally what she says. And some people get offended when I do that impression. And by the way, like, fuck you. But that literally is what she says. Like, I have seen clips with, like, he did it with a degree of class. And it's like, all right, I guess so. Like, that's, you know, I understand that your dad backed the Contras. I'm sure that, like, when the Contras were getting money from Reagan to fucking kill nuns, they did it with a degree of class. Like, everybody knows Donald Trump is – I mean, Donald Trump is everything that's wrong with this country and the world combined in one person. It's like Nas. I'm like the 99 Summer Jam, all races in one man. He is every pathology. But that's real basic. Like, if you don't get that Donald Trump is the worst, then I mean, maybe we got to talk to you because you're, you know, you're just gone. But if you're just some asshole who's made a living, whether you're Rick Wilson or Steve Schmidt promoting war.
Rick Wilson, that's another dude I wanted to, I was trying to freaking think of.
And these dumb liberals who are always, you know, hating on Bernie Sanders because God forbid we get everybody health care and college. But like, oh, did you see the Rick Wilson tweet about Donald Trump's hands? Oh, my God. It's so pathetic.
You know, I'm happy. You know, it's just nice because, like, this guy, to wrap this up, it's just nice that as exasperating as watching this shit has been, watching this guy just get beaten over the head with the drum. just people have just been gashing this dude everywhere, like, just destroying him. You know, like, somebody, yo, what's your favorite? Who's okay, since you're such a Democrat, blah, 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 who's your favorite Democratic president of the last 50 years? Man said FDR. First of all, that was like 70 years. Second of all, like, how could you be opposed to all of these programs, all of these ideas, and actually say, actually fix your mouth to say FDR, bro. And people, he just got
FDR.
He just
FDR.
Got
FDR.
FDR, bro. FDR. You are the antithesis, I mean, of everything that was happening with that. Another one.
Exactly. Keep FDR's name out of your fucking boca vente or whatever the fuck.
It was nice to see him just get smoked. Oh my Lord, he was so out of his depth. It was beautiful to watch, and it's good every now and again to, like, because these billion, they don't actually have to go out and talk to nobody, right? Like,
no,
there's no accountability for Howard Schultz. Like, nobody's ever asking him hard questions. Like, nobody's ever holding him to account for anything. Like, because he doesn't have to. He flies private. He has a yacht. He doesn't have to interact with any of this stuff. So, you know, he can't.
It's the Kanye effect on some level.
Oh yeah, 100%. The ideas that he gets to say at all his fancy dinner parties, and everybody claps for him and says, "Hell yeah!" You know, the type of dinner parties that, like, no normal people would be at. He's like, "No, I'm gonna say this shit in public now," and people are like, "No, sir. No, sir."
Right? Because they've been all walking around like telling each other. Like, I remember the last thing I'll say, the last anecdote I'll give. I remember a guy who, you know, my parents went up to Massachusetts and were, you know, hyper broke hippies. And then my aunt went and worked in Wall Street. And her husband, my uncle, who, you know, is a good guy, I'm not trying to trash him, but I can't help it. This is probably like 12 years ago or something, right? You know, I'm like, I don't even know if I was even – I mean, yeah, I was in college or something, right? But a long, long time ago, and we were talking about politics, and he's like, you know, the thing is, I'm a fiscal conservative and a social liberal. And even then it was like, dude, that's the cliche of every fucking person like you. And he said it like it was some type of like bold, innovative thing.
He thought he was jumping out there with it.
Yes.
He thought he was jumping out there with, like, hey, I'm social. I don't have a problem with gay people, but black people need to get off welfare.
You're telling me that you think that, like, gay people aren't that icky, and you're terrified of black people, and you want a tax cut. Wow, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, it's you know, and again, as I mentioned on Twitter today, it's like nobody ever mentions fiscal conservatism as it pertains to the military industrial. Like, that never gets any play. Like, you can't even get that conversation started anywhere meaningful, anywhere, like, ever. No president's going to do it. Shit, nobody. You can't even get the ball rolling on it. Right? You can't even get the ball rolling on the idea that maybe we should spend less than we do on military. Like, That never happens. And then nobody ever calls a big ass tax cut what it is. It's a spend. We're spending. We're taking money away from the pot and giving it back to people who already have piles of it. It's a spend. It's not revenue. Tax cuts is not revenue. It's spending. We never talk about it like that. And none of this shit came out of this guy's mouth, but he's talking about fiscal conserve. Anyway, man, we probably spent too much time on this fucking idiot.
I don't know about this stuff here.
You know, like, it was just rich. It's just rich.
Why do you think so many people have, why do you think we've gotten this kind of unbelievable react? Why?
I don't know, but what I do know is the president wants you to run. Not only did he tweet as much, but yeah. Maggie Haberman in the New York Times is reporting this morning that this week at a fundraiser, he told his supporters he wants you to run because he thinks it will help get him reelected.
Well, he should be careful for what he wishes for.
Of course, moving on to 2020, man, Kamala Harris had a town hall the other day, and you know, I'm somebody who's not, I'm definitely not pro Kamala Harris. Like, she hasn't demonstrated, like, up to the town hall and her actual announcement. She hasn't really gone out and articulated much, right? Like, obviously, to me, the top choice for the Dems is Bernie Sanders, right? Like, and right. that's, you know, unlike last time where Bernie kind of got in almost as a lark, you know, but he had the best policies. But now, like, it's like, no, Bernie has operationally, he's equipped. Policy wise, obviously he's far and away more aligned with what I would like to see happen policy wise. Enthusiasm, like, if whatever you want the measurement to be right now on January 30th of 2019, Bernie Sanders is the strongest candidate on the Democratic side. Yeah. Like, that's just a fact, right? It's not like 2015. It's not like where he didn't have his operations in order and he didn't have the name recognition. Like, it's, bro, he has literally everything lined up right now. So to me, he's the strongest candidate in all the ways that you would call somebody strong, right? All the ways that you would describe a potential candidate is strong. Kamala Harris interests me is because when people say, well, she was a cop, and that's a negative. And obviously, like, anybody who's enforcing pretty much, yo, I don't know that there's a state in America, because we're overly law enforced in this whole country, where the top cop is doing something that can be described as liberal. Right? Like, not if you are operating.
Larry Krasner.
Yeah, Krasner. And that's it. And that guy got in like 2 years ago. Right, and he's the first of his.
Well, you know what though. Well, what about Elliot Spitzer though?
Elliot Spitzer did a cool thing where he was just like, "We are gonna do the strict whatever drug crimes and murders and all of that shit, whatever rape, but we really gonna go after these Wall Street cats." Like, yeah, he was a savage. He was a beast for that. I forgot about that.
Well, anyway, I mean, but let me just put that on the table and then finish what you're saying. Like, if you didn't look, there's a lot of stuff to pick apart with it. But I'll say this. If Kamala Harris had as regressive and as harsh prosecutorial record as she has, and she put Steve Mnuchin in jail, and she went after mortgage, you know, fraud, and she went after polluters, and like, then it would be like, all right, okay. I don't know necessarily if one hand washes the other, but that means we're talking about a completely different politician here. But yeah, if you are the same person that wants to terrorize poor families about fucking truancy, and then you pass an opportunity to prosecute Steve Mnuchin, pretty bad.
No, and nobody would call that good. But I'm just saying, like, it's It's I'm just saying, like, for her to not have been that, she would have had to been Elliot Spitzer. That's my point, right? Like, when Jay-Z said to be Bobby then, you got to be Bobby now. Like, you would have had to be Elliot Spitzer, right? Like, you would have had to been that guy. You would have had to been somebody going completely against the grain in 3 trillion ways. And Elliot Spitzer is somebody who could afford to do that because he's from a rich ass family, right? Like, there are certain things in place that prevent people from doing this very thing. Like, most people in Elliot Spitzer's background don't do that. They're friends with the Wall Street people, right? Like, the rich, right. And so yeah. When you're that rich, you can do shit outside of the system. Is what I'm saying. Like, the system is not set up to have, you know, half Elliot Spitzers and half what's my man's name? Jeff Sessions. You understand what I'm saying? Like, the system is meant for right. Jeff Sessions is kind of like, I guess, on the far reaches, but you're not getting that much further than him. And that goes to weed. Right. That goes to everything. That's like the system. So to have that, to have had that job means that you were executing conservative policies. That's just a fact, right? And whatever we in. Shit, man, you want to be president, people have the right to hold that against you. The reason why it's interesting to me, it's like, all right, one, she's black. So that means it's a lot different to get there. Like, what it takes to get there, the hands you got to shake, the people you got to know. And, right. You know, and at the time, I'm not realizing it, but, you know, listening to her little speech is the Barry thing all over again. In the sense that, like, I don't have to be radical because I'm black, right? And in order to get where Barry got Harlem, I mean, I said, I was about to say Harlem Law Review, Mike. The Harvard Law Review. These jokes write themselves. You know, the Harvard Law Review, all of these elite circles, like, the bottom line is Barack is an elite liberal. He's not some radical dude. He's just an Ivy League liberal dude. And on the spectrum of liberalism, they're some of our most conservative folks, right? And, you know, I think Kamala Harris, she had an opportunity to do a Hillary Clinton, and people come at your authenticity, like, how authentic are you? She had a chance to do that. You know, just be like, you know what? I used to be crazy conservative, but I've seen the light on a lot of this shit, and I'm going to try to be as liberal as possible. She just did the Barry. She just did the, I'm black, therefore I am. And, and like, straight up said nothing in the way of our most progressive, you know, aims that we have right now in the party. Like, nothing, bro. She's just straight up like, yo, we're not the type of country that imprisons children, but the thing about it, Kamala, is that we are, because that's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, and people are supporting it. We are that type of country, right? Like, she's all of this soaring rhetoric, that's what she went with. And I think the problem for her, what she's going to see is that, fool me once, shame on me, or shame on you, right. Fool me twice. Fool me again, fool me again, Mike. Like, I think people, like, progressives, like, to the point where people are calling Barry a bad president, like, I will never fix my mouth to say that. But I know a lot of progressives who do, right? And it's for that very reason. It's like people were just hoodwinked by the idea of the guy and his personality and the possibility of what this guy could do and who he could be, to where, like, I don't think she's gonna get the same benefit of the doubt. And, you know, If the critique is like, you're a cop and you're pro corporatism and you're pro this, like, it can't be kumbaya is the message, bro. It's got to be I've had some sort of awakening. You got to come at me on some Bobby Kennedy shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, my brother got killed. You know, I know what it's like to be, I know what it feels like now to feel like you ain't got shit, to feel lost, to feel hopeless. I know what it feel like to say, like, I had a dramatic event in my life, you know, and I've changed. And I'm like, I'm about you black people now, right? Like, fuck all the, you know, Cuban Missile Crisis lies. Fuck COINTELPRO. Fuck all the illegal shit that I was doing to citizens. Fuck all. I saw the light, y'all. I'm ultra liberal. I'm about the black, the downtrodden. That's what I'm doing now. She came out with some bullshit, quite frankly. That's just my read on things, man.
I mean, you know, it's all what he said. I agree with everything you said. I think it's also like, look, I've been trying to, you know, particularly speak to my audience around, you know, not definitely less so, I would say, honestly, just like people that are patrons and podcasts and people on, you know, I would say the YouTube audience is much more broad. And I think it's really narrow and it's greatly exaggerated and lied about. But there are some people who identify on the left. I don't even know if I would really consider them left, who they play to the stories that are made up about, you know, basically like Bernie bro this and that and all of that. And so it's like, look, I think there's nothing. It's like, here's what I've been saying. I mean, I apologize because I have already delivered this line a few times. But, you know, it's like I said, look, on a really basic level, any right-thinking person would love the concept of a black woman killing Donald Trump, figuratively. But like,
that would be
right.
Yeah, sure.
Right. So
it's a cool concept.
So what I'm all I'm saying is like, look, I think, you know, to me, it's like three different things to just keep in mind. One, it's like, all right, I think that there's no problem with acknowledging the historical nature of this candidacy. So like, I mean, I'm actually a big admirer of Shirley Chisholm and everybody should look up her 1972 campaign. But it's like, look, you know what? This is different. It's different that there is a black woman who is a top tier contender to become president of the United States. That's fucking great. Then, and we can acknowledge that. And then, but then on the flip, like, then it would actually be very condescending and very bizarre in its own way to not then assess the record. And to me, and then even there, we could say like, look, obviously there's a calculation, of course. I think this is a black woman who's thinking about a national political career. So, and so being quote unquote tough on crime would be the obvious move.
Yeah.
And then you got to get into the real details of things like the George Gage case, which was a wrongful conviction, which she defended all the way through based on testimony that had been thrown out by a judge. There's a piece in the New York Times by the director of the Innocence Project in LA called Kamala Harris Was Not a Progressive Prosecutor. And I got to say, it's horrifying. And it's, you know, I would just say when it comes to criminal justice issues, they all have problems of one degree or another. But Joe Biden wrote the 94 legislation, which was a massive increase to the prison industrial complex. And Kamala Harris threw all sorts of people in jail for all sorts of nonviolent crimes while going, you know, choosing not to prosecute a Steve Mnuchin. Add to it, just not like – even David Axelrod wrote a piece and, you know, look, he obviously loves Obama and Obama's his guy, but he's saying like, whatever else you say, like, no, Obama did have a really distinct message for his time. Obama also talked about the invasion of Iraq. Like Obama did some stuff that set him apart in a way that was distinct, which she has not done yet.
Yeah. And I think what I was saying about Barry earlier is just the idea that, like, on something like gay marriage, he was kind of one foot in, one foot out before right. He even got elected. It took after him being elected for him to come out and just say, I'm straight up in favor of it, right? Also, I think his background, when it comes to something like community organizing, where, like, he literally had to knock on people's doors, right? There's just a facility with speaking and communicating with normal people that he possessed. I'm talking about just policy-wise, he wasn't no damn FDR, right? Like,
they're very similar. They're very similar. All I would say, though, is I think, like, I think, yeah, they're very similar.
No,
but
and,
I think,
no, and it's not even about that he wasn't. But it's like it's not even that he didn't govern as some incredibly progressive person. It, like, he never claimed to be. We put it on him, right? It's not definitely like he went back on something. We all assumed it of him because of what he symbolized. Kamala Harris, right, I'm saying, is like, bruh, you ain't gonna get that. You're not gonna get that. You're just not. And of course, again, because Barry wasn't a cop. He wasn't a prosecutor, right? Like, he would have had to refute a lot of that stuff. Like, if you're gonna come out and just straight up defend the ridiculous rates that we incarcerate people in, like, that shit ain't going to fly in the primary. It might fly in the general, and people come out and support you anyway. It ain't going to, not today. It's not going to fly. You're not going to, these issues, they show, like, Elizabeth Warren's, the tax increase that she's proposed, they've done the polling. It's polling at like 63% nationwide. We're not even talking about the Democratic base. It's polling favorably with a majority of Republican voters, bro. This is the climate we talking about. Like, you can't come in here and start hitting me with, this ain't our America. Like, that ain't going to cut it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the only other thing that I would say, too, that just really strikes me, and, you know, this is speculation because we got to start seeing how the polls, you know, shake out. But I also just really, like, I totally can see and concede that definitely sometimes people who are white and associated with the left, you know, they don't articulate issues around race or even understand some of those issues as well as they need to and should. But I also think conversely, like, this weird bougie centrist resistance thing, which has a bizarre irrational hatred of Bernie Sanders, I think it actually just conceals the fact that, like, first of all, a lot of these people, again, I'm not saying they're Republicans, but they're conservative mostly. They actually are kind of on some version of socially liberal, fiscally conservative. They don't have the same types of commitments to real broad-based justice. And that throws another issue into me, which is like, look, of course, in this country, because of how racist and sexist this country is in so many ways, obviously, just the mere reality of a contender that is a black woman is very significant. There's an essentialism and a condescension that erases so many distinctions. And this could be any community, right? But in this case, it happens to be the black community. It's like, I could tell you anecdotally, speaking of, like, you know, black people I know that are not, like, you know, media pundits or on Twitter or, you know, lawyers, right? Just in the same way you could talk to, Frank, I mean, contrary to stereotype, Jewish people that aren't fucking lawyers, right? And it's like, cool, that's awesome that Kamala's in the game, but what's the plan on student debt relief? What's the plan on, you know, these, as a matter of fact, police in our neighborhood? What's the plan on healthcare? What's the plan? And so I actually think, like, again, you know, I'll work on my side and myself and, you know, whatever. But conversely, there's a real condescending, essentialist bullshit case that is actually, you know, not only eliminating necessary conversations on economics and race and policy, but is actually just, you know, it's an idealized way. But we talked the other week about, like, positive stereotyping. It's like, you see people who a couple years ago, they would have defended Hillary Clinton using the phrase super predators. And now they're all like, oh, black Twitter ain't having that. It's like, what? Excuse me? Like, what? You know, like, using the Crip walk to own Trump. These are like wine Crips. And it's fucking weird. It's uncomfortable. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
And it's projection and essentialization and another negation of humanity, frankly.
And you know, a lot of what gets lost in all of that shit is how not unpopular that sentiment was amongst actual black people in the moment, right? Like, right. It's not like it came out and black people, of course, there were intellectuals who found it, public intellectuals who found it problematic, who were black in the moment, who were like, hey, what's going on? But the bottom line is, especially when it comes to policing, a lot of times in the neighborhood, there are people in, you know, really bad areas who are black, who are like, yo, we need some real live policing to happen over here. You know, like, we don't need to ignore that part of it.
That was what Jerry Brown said when he was mayor of Oakland. He said, and he was, you know, he was really vicious on policing. And I remember in some interview, he was like, it's all the like hippie left wing white people that I, you know, they're the ones who are livid. Like, and then you go to the working class black, and of course it's self-serving, but I'm sure it was some truth to it. He's like, all the working class, middle class black families, they love it.
And listen, exactly. Bro, Michael, the reason why you and I are laughing is because we both know and have met middle class black people who, you're hearing it in your head right now, loving
yes!
it. You can hear
yes!
it.
Yes. You can, and that's what pisses me off so much. It's like the liberal racism has morphed. And again, it's better if it leads you to vote for Kamala Harris over, you know, the type of racism that will lead you to vote for fucking Donald Trump. But it's essentializing. And it's eliminating the fact that there's so many different political traditions, so many different needs, so many different desires inside the black community, like any other community,
Yeah.
All communities have internal diversity.
But Mike, this is the thing, though. The race conversation just happens to be a lot more complicated on our side. Right.
Right.
And so we actually have to deal with these nuances. And, you know, the advantage of having a homogenous party is that you don't have to interface with these things, man. These questions don't come up. And if they do, everybody's kind of on board. It's like, yeah, black people, you shut the fuck up and stop complaining. Next question.
Yeah, it's like, hey, my family came from Norway. Mine came from Ireland. I think black people should shut the fuck up. How about you?
They've had a 300-year head start.
Station right there. Yeah, right. I think Muslims are terrorists. I think we should lock kids up. Yeah.
And what we're not going to do, like, we don't need to do, and, you know, to bring up her record as it pertains to the only other job she's had in elected office, like, you can't call that unfair. Now, you know, a lot of the shit that Hillary was dealing with last time when it comes to, like, is she likable? Is she this? It's like, Jesus Christ, is Chris Christie likable? Like, what the fuck, bro? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are we talking about? You know, like, a lot of that was bullshit, legitimately. And we don't need to do that to Kamala Harris.
You're not going to, because I've actually said this before. Like, I was like, look, Hillary faced a lot of sexism and she's not charismatic and she doesn't, like, she isn't. That's reality. And what's interesting now actually is, like, Elizabeth Warren has substance and is not charismatic. No. And we'll see with Kamala Harris. But Kamala Harris, like, she's very charismatic. She's good.
Sure.
She's good. In that regard, she's good.
So we'll see. But early indications from somebody who, I don't want to say I wasn't a Kamala Harris fan, but I was far from a skeptic. But now I'm you know, I'm like, man, you better, y'all better come up with something. Especially in this particular Democratic primary, man. There was a time where this would have been more than enough, I think, as far as what she's bringing to the table. But right now, the competition is too fierce. The stakes are too high. She's going to have to figure something out. Yeah, I guess that's as we did enough on Kamala, man, I definitely want to get into Davos, because what happened over there, what's been happening over there the past couple of days, man. And, you know, Mike, like, I vaguely have an idea about what Davos is. It's like billionaires who want to be pseudo-intellectual all hang out somewhere for a few days. And, you know, media types show up or whatever. But, like, what's your read of what Davos is?
For well, the I mean, that's a, it's a huge networking event. I mean, I think it's changed. Like, its prestige is a little different. You know, like, say, in the late 90s when, like, Bill Clinton and Tony Blair were in power, I mean, it was, like, the pinnacle of that type of, like, corporate globalization. But, I mean, it isn't just billionaires. I mean, it's every, you know, it's heads of state from around the world. It's high-powered journalists. It is, it's a schmooze fest of a lot of the world's most powerful people. And then they invite, you know, a handful of, like, actually interesting people, whether they be activists or intellectuals or academics. And, like, what's interesting now, which we'll get into in the last couple of minutes here, I know you're about to set up, is, like, I think that they've always kind of fancied, like, themselves, like, oh, no, we're willing to hear people criticize us or whatever, because that's kind of, like, the ethos is, like, we're, quote, unquote, enlightened billionaires, although it's beautiful because, as you see, as soon as you start talking about their taxes, they have temper tantrums and, you know, they're spoiled, dangerous oligarchs like any – like, just any of them are. But I think now, because of social media, the calculation is flipped. It's like, instead of just being in a room with, like, fucking Bono, and it's like, yeah, it's a streaming on C-SPAN, maybe I should try to, like, help these people be a little bit more decent. You can just say, like, hey, you guys are fucking full of shit. And it beams out across Instagram and Twitter, and it's like, mission accomplished. Fuck Davos. Like, and fuck, man, everything it represents.
It's incredible, man. And, you know, they had a panel, and this historian by the name of Rutger Bregman, he's from somewhere in Scandinavia, of course. And I say of course because socialism is, like, actually thriving over there in a major way. That's why I say of course, not to say that only smart people are over there, but he's from a place that, like, the concept of collectivism is not weird. It doesn't seem like this foreign object. It doesn't seem like, you know, anti-American or anti-this. It just seems like something that works pretty well when you put the proper resources, right, and thought equity into it, right? Like, it can work for a lot of people, and it has, and it yields amazing outcomes for, like, a huge amount of your society, right? That's why I say, of course, but he gets up there and he says, quote,
"This is my first time at Davos, and I find it quite a bewildering experience, to be honest. I mean, 1,500 private jets have flown in here to hear Sir David Attenborough speak about, you know, how we're wrecking the planet. And I mean, I hear people talk in the language of participation and justice and equality and transparency. But then, I mean, almost no one raises the real issue of tax avoidance, right? And of the rich just not paying their fair share. I mean, it feels like I'm at a firefighters conference and no one's allowed to speak about water, right?" there was only one panel, actually.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've had two. You're the second of our panelists.
There was only one panel.
Let's go there.
One panel hidden away in the media center that was actually about tax avoidance. Yeah. I was one of the 15 participants. So something needs to change here. I mean, 10 years ago, the World Economic Forum asked the question, what must industry do to prevent a broad social backlash? The answer is very simple. Just stop talking about philanthropy and start talking about taxes. Mm-hmm. Taxes, taxes. We need to... Mm-hmm. I mean, just 2 days ago, there was a billionaire in here. What's his name? Michael Dell. And he asked the question, like, name me one country where a top marginal tax rate of 70% has actually worked. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm a historian. The United States. That's where it has actually worked. In the 1950s, during Republican President Eisenhower, you know, the war veteran, the top marginal tax rate in the US was 91% for people like Michael Dell. You know, the top estate tax for people like Michael Dell was more than 70%. I mean, this is not rocket science. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can talk for a very long time about all these stupid philanthropy schemes. We can invite Bono once more, but come on, we gotta be talking about taxes. Yikes. That's it, taxes, taxes, taxes. All the rest is bullshit, in my opinion.
Mind you, and this is, you know, and this is like, this is at a conference, like we said, with former CEOs and like before that, which I didn't mention in the quote, he says, like, I get over here and it's like 1,200 private jets. Like, this is a wild, like, you know, group of people that are assembled here. And it's like all these high-minded ideas of justice and equality. It's like, bro, rich people just get to shovel their taxes away, bro. In a way that, like, the dude that works at McDonald's, his shit comes right out. comes right out, bro. And the people who have the most of it, who have the most to contribute, you have the most responsibility, quite frankly, because society has shined the kindest on you. And you need to sprinkle some of that shine on the rest of us, right? Like, that's literally your responsibility. He's like, bro, we can't even get up here and talk about tax avoidance. Like, what's the point of this shit? Right. We're not even going to talk about the main source of it.
Exactly. And I mean, there was also this other exchange where, which was really embarrassing for everybody, because this reporter from the Washington Post, she's literally a economics reporter, was like, she asked Michael Dell, you know, like, not seriously, but kind of like, hey, what do you think about, you know, the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez proposal of taxing people at 70% after their first $10 million. It's really important people understand that. That is literally after the first $10 million a year you've made, not to mention all the other things we need to do that are just straight up taxing people just sitting passively on wealth. But, and Michael Dell had a big tangent, you know, he was like, oh, well, I don't think that's going to work really well economically. And, you know, did the usual silly propaganda, which, like, actually, I'm sure he believes. Like, I think a lot of these people really are. They're totally historically and economically illiterate. And then this professor sitting next to him is like, well, one place it did work is in the United States. And then he talks about, you know, all the times where we actually did have these high rates after World War II, and we had amazing growth and all the rest of it. And then what was funny was, the reporter from the Washington Post, she's like, yeah, kind of in the 1980s, like when Reagan was slashing taxes. It's like, you're the fucking economics reporter? Like, yeah. Everybody's just being embarrassed here.
Yeah, and of course, after the tongue lashing that this dude got, like, well, dude, like, I'm a historian. I study history. Like, the marginal tax rate in this country at one point was at 91%. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, if you want to have a discussion, maybe we should get it to 65, 70. But, like, that shit used to be at 91%, and it was just fine. The economy did not collapse. Like, we had the most prosperity as far as, like, spreading the wealth amongst the most amount of people. Like, that's just a fact. This isn't me making shit up or me, like, no, like, this idea that, well, we never tried it and seen it work anywhere. No, it worked here. There in America, if you're coming from that guy's perspective. And of course, Ken Goldman gets up, former CFO of Yahoo. And he's like, oh, you guys keep talking about taxes and all this shit, man. Like, shit's pissing me off. Why don't you talk about, we got unemployment rates the lowest. Unemployment rates the lowest amongst youths, amongst black people, amongst this, amongst that. And then, of course, they just, like, when people act like nobody who actually studies this, pays attention to it, dedicates any amount of, you know, sweat equity, time, thought, brain power to this, agrees with any of these idiots, like anybody who spends any significant amount of time thinking about this stuff knows what the actual truth is. And this woman, Winnie, I'm going to butcher her last name, man, but it's Bien Yima, I think, man.
Mandela.
Okay, Winnie Mandela.
You know, I'm stupid.
This woman is, you know, she's an aeronautical engineer, politician, diplomat. You know, somebody who's actually qualified to talk about this stuff, and she's just like.
The gentleman who talked about, who said we've just talked taxes and that jobs are there and there's low and unemployment rates are low. Let me tell you something. We're talking about jobs, but the quality of those jobs. And we also work with poultry workers in the richest country in the world, the United States. Poultry workers. These are women who are cutting the chickens and packing them, and we buy them in the supermarkets. Dolores, one woman we work with there, told us that she and her co-workers have to wear diapers to work because they are not allowed toilet breaks. This is in the richest country in the world. That's not a dignified job. Those are the jobs we are being told about, that globalization is bringing jobs. The quality of the jobs matter. It matters. These are not jobs of dignity. In many countries, workers no longer have a voice. They are not allowed to unionize. They are not allowed to negotiate for salaries. So we're talking about jobs, but jobs that bring dignity. We are talking about healthcare. The World Bank has told us that 3.4 billion people who earn $5.5 a day are on the verge, are just a medical bill away from sinking into poverty. They don't have health care. They are just a crop failure away from sinking back into poverty. They have no crop insurance. So don't tell me about low levels of unemployment. You are counting the wrong things. You're not counting dignity of people. You're counting exploited people.
These are not jobs where it's like, yo, I can pay my rent.
It's Winnie Byanyima, and she's also, yeah, she was an aeronautical engineer, and she's now an Oxfam executive director, and they put out those really important reports on the wealth gap. So, yeah, she's all over this.
Exactly. And she's just like, yo, these jobs suck. Yes, people are getting paid, but it's just like the wages aren't going anywhere, right? Like if you talk about – you just look at the, you know, the actual median income is staying the same, and the cost of literally every single thing else around you that you have to pay in order to live – is going up. None of it makes sense. The only people whose money is going up are the people who already have a shit ton of it. This isn't a conspiracy. This isn't a lie. This is just what it is, bro. Like, this is just what it is. And it's just so amazing when these people who get to live in an actual bubble, because a lot of times people talk about the liberal bubble and blah, 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 and real people don't actually care about Louis C.K. earning a living. And to a certain extent, I do fucking agree with that. I do understand that lament and that critique, but like somebody like this freaking former Yahoo CFO, can you imagine who he interacts with on a daily basis? Again, like, you think him or Howard Schultz talk to garbage men? Like, invite garbage men to their house for dinner? Like, come to their dinner parties? Like, I don't know, like, are at your birthday party? Like, no! The people who they are around don't talk to them about reality. They don't have to face reality. They get to live in the clouds.
That's it. There's nothing else to add to that. That's the perfect summary of why. I mean, Anand Giridharadas, who also, that's a whole other one. I mean, I covered it on Michael Brooks' show. He ended up pissing off both Bill Gates and Tony Blair, who are two more, you know, just totally trash people. And he said, Davos is a reunion of world wreckers. And like you just said, I mean, you just summarized it. So that's the woke bros treatment. I mean, I think next week we got to hit him with some positive examples, but hopefully there'll be some stuff to bring to everybody's attention that will be forward momentum for next week. I just want to say, you know, definitely if you there might still be a few, come to the live show at the Bell House, become a patron at patreon.com/TMBS. You literally get 2-to-1 content, illicit histories on everywhere from Iran to Jamaica, and the post games where we take your calls and your Discord questions. And Waz was just there. You know, we have a lot of fun with that. There's a lot of comedy. There's a lot of nonsense going on. You can stream it on Michael Brooks Show YouTube channel. And also, of course, you can listen to it and subscribe to it on iTunes. But the best thing to do is hit that Patreon button. And so, yeah, I just want to put that out. Anything else to hit? You guys are the best. And also, can't say anything yet, but Waz and I are going to have an exciting announcement in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, a couple of weeks, a crazy fire announcement, man. I'm really, really excited about this. So many things in the works this year. I think our, you know, TMBS family, Count the Dings community, everybody should be excited about what's to come this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. Of course, make sure you subscribe when or if you can to Count the Dings. I mean, patreon.com/countthedings, man. We really rely on that support. It's not one of those things that's like an extravagance or whatever. We really rely on the support from the Patreon, man, and all the people who show us love with their hard-earned dollars. And not just that, like, hit us up on social, come to shows, and just, like, you know, really lift us up. We appreciate all of that. See you guys next week. Make sure you subscribe to Back to Back, The House of Strauss, what's the Interceptable? I forget, Kian Fahey's podcast, man. Of course, if you're listening to this, you're subscribed, I hope, and have rated Black Opinions Matter. You know, shouts to everybody, man. See you guys next week.